Hi, everybody. I'm Pat Doney here in the NBC5 studio, joined alongside Jared Sandler from 105.3 The Fan of the Rangers Radio Network. It is the NBC5 Sports Podcast presented by 105.3 The Fan. Jared, we're live in studio, episode number 5. Just the second time we're doing this live, and man, there's a lot going on in sports right now in North Texas.
There's a ton going on, and not just at the professional level, the college level, and I think based on your travels today, I guess even at the high school level, and that's certainly going to pick up this weekend.
I have been all over the place, co-hosted the Sean and RJ show, filled in on 105.3 The Fan with Sean Sharif. Then I swung over and got EJ Smith, Emmett's son, his commitment to Stanford. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And then here we are now with the sports podcast. Later is Duncanville High School getting ready for the state championship game. And then Aledo High School, where they're going to have a couple of players make some big-time commitments as well. But we're going to start with our weekend recap, our week recap segment here on the podcast, and we begin with the Dallas Cowboys right now, who shocked everybody. I'm sure you were shocked. I was blown away by what I saw in AT&T Stadium when they destroyed the Los Angeles Rams 44-21. This wasn't a game. I mean, this was, I didn't see it coming. I expected to potentially see fans leaving the game with 5 minutes left to go. I just didn't think it would be because the Cowboys were rocking the Rams that way. What did you see that really stood out to you most, and what do you take away from this win for the Cowboys?
Okay, so two things. One, if you would have told me before the game the Cowboys were going to get such little production from Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and Randall Cobb, I would have told you there's no way that they are winning. As a matter of fact, I would have said the final score probably is accurate. It's just going to be reversed. So for them to win without getting production from those guys, specifically Amari, because we've had discussions since Amari joined the Cowboys. Before he came, the offense was stagnant and inconsistent, and then last year he arrived and all of a sudden things picked up. This year, when Amari's been absent or not really a part of things, the offense hasn't moved as well. Well, that wasn't the case on Sunday. To me, that's important because as you get to the playoffs, you're facing better talent. And, you know, can't assume playoffs yet, but certainly a strong possibility depending on what happens this weekend. And teams are going to try to take away your best guy. It used to be Zeke. But I think with the way things have evolved, people are going to try to take away Amari. So to be able to put up points with Amari not really a factor statistically, I think to me says a lot.
And it didn't have to be because the running game was so good for the Cowboys. Both Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard go over 100 yards in the game. I believe it's the second time that's happened this season. Both looked really good running the football, which is a great sign going forward with the Cowboys. Although there was some interesting, not great news for the Cowboys that came out of practice Wednesday. Apparently Dak Prescott had an MRI on his shoulder. He's limited in practice. Not great timing going into this Eagles game that we're going to preview here in just a moment. But overall, I think you're 100% right. I think the Cowboys have shown now they can win in a different way, and this could be the kind of confidence and the kind of build up for momentum a little bit. Sometimes that can be overdone a little bit, but I do think with this team this year, the peaks and valleys, the highs and lows, when they've been good, they've been great. When they've been bad, it's been really bad. Maybe this is the sign that they're about to start playing better football here for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you know, I go back and forth on how much I believe in momentum and how much that can impact things, but if you do believe in it, the Eagles had to eke out a win against a bad Redskins team. Right. The Cowboys absolutely obliterated a good Rams team, a team that now is probably not making the playoffs. But, I mean, their playoff lives were not totally on the line, but it's going to be incredibly tough for them to get in. I guess if you do believe in momentum, it couldn't be any better for the Cowboys moving into this game. And I'll tell you what, Pat, another thing that stood out to me, I want to make sure this guy gets some love. And he's exactly the type of guy I think you would love.
Okay.
Sean Lee. Yeah.
I loved the note that he shared with us after the game. His high school football coach from Upper St. Clair High School in Pennsylvania was there in the stadium to watch him play. He hadn't been able to see him play a whole lot. He's been dealing with a lot of health issues throughout the last couple of decades. So Sean said he really wanted to house the interception for a touchdown because he wanted to show his old high school coach he still had running ability. By the way, Sean Lee rushed for over 1,200 yards and 21 touchdowns as a senior in high school before going to Penn State.
And so, a great basketball player, right?
Exactly,
if I'm
right.
Not mistaken,
he was
a great high school basketball player.
All over the place. No question. Let's transition to the Dallas Mavericks, who suffered their biggest loss of the season without question. I'm talking about Luka Doncic going down with the ankle injury at this point. And yet, even though they lost that game against the Miami Heat, a good team. They bounce back the next game. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks in a game they were up pretty big. Giannis scored 48 points for Milwaukee, and yet the Mavs found a way to win without their best player. I thought this was an incredible win for the Mavericks, and it can really build a lot of confidence going forward for when Luka is back.
So as long as you tell me that this is not going to be a long injury, and right. I know that reports are 2 weeks, maybe even a little less, and that it's not going to linger in February or March or April or May, you know, if the Mavs get that deep, then I think this could actually be a great opportunity for Porzingis to find his rhythm. And I'll tell you, offensively, Porzingis hasn't been nearly as good as we've seen in the past with the Knicks. I love that even through this, after about the first couple weeks of the season, the rebounding, career-high rebounding.
Yeah.
It seems like he's making a big impact as a shot blocker. He's getting involved, screen setting, stuff like that. Now it's time to see him get into a rhythm offensively. And you could say, well, when Luka comes back, whatever rhythm he gets into is going to kind of change course because now the flow is going to be different. I just think confidence-wise for a guy coming off an ACL like he is, to be able to just show himself, hey, I can still be that guy, I think that's important. And I think whenever your best player goes out, again, as long as it's not for a long time.
Sure, yeah.
Giving other guys who you're going to have to rely on at times opportunities to be the guy or among the guys more so than they were previously is huge. These minutes, these opportunities are invaluable
yes.
to me for Jalen Brunson.
Right.
You can look at Seth Curry and the impact he had against Milwaukee. I just think that at the end of the day, again, want Luka healthy, want him there every game. But as long as it's just 2 weeks or less, maybe this could be a good thing.
I've compared it when I was on The Fan this morning with Drew Brees and the Saints going out for five games. That Saints team had to learn that it could win and find a way to win without its star quarterback. And I think they're going to be better for it. I think they are real Super Bowl contenders. And not to say that they weren't at the beginning of the season, but it could take them just a little bit further. Well, the Mavericks are now being considered contenders, right? They're one of the prime candidates to potentially land Andre Iguodala. And literally the Yahoo headline said the contenders who could consider Iguodala and the Mavericks were the first team on the list. Who thought we would even see that email, you know, 2 months ago, right? Amazing we're seeing it. And I do think you're right. I think it could be a boost, and it could be what they need going forward. Now, speaking of boosts, and you mentioned a second ago, I'm in the Cowboys locker room more often than you are. Nobody is more plugged in with the Texas Rangers than Jared Sandler. So I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say about the deal. I was disappointed they didn't land Anthony Rendon, and I know there was a real chance, and you were one of the people saying there was a real chance, and they were in it early, and then it just didn't happen. But, man, landing Corey Kluber is as an opportunity to trade with the Cleveland Indians. That's not a bad secondary prize there, right? I mean, a fantastic pitcher, pitched at Coppell High School in the area, and he's been fantastic for a long time. What do you think of the deal, what they gave up in the deal, and what can Corey Kluber do for this Rangers team?
So let's start with just the acquisition itself. And the first thing I thought of is that this team's not done. You don't go and get Corey Kluber, who you only have 2 years of control with, if you're just going to take your foot off the pedal the rest of this offseason. Now, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee Anthony Rendon like I did earlier, or Nolan Arenado, Chris Bryant, obviously Anthony Rendon now
right.
With the Angels. But I kind of thought that Anthony Rendon's happening. I'm going to take a step back, no guarantees. But are they going to be in talks for Chris Bryant? Yeah. Are they going to be in talks for Nolan Arenado? Absolutely. That's the one to me that makes more sense.
Wow.
There's some hurdles along the way because of the length of the contract and the opt-out that he has and the no-trade clause and stuff like that. But I think those are hurdles that can be cleared. Wilson Contreras, maybe helping the team behind the plate. Whatever the direction is, I think they're going to do something significant to upgrade this lineup.
Let me jump in real quick there because those three names are incredible. So if that happens, okay, this is a huge win of an offseason
yeah.
already if they just add one of those three guys and you think that's a possibility. Okay, go
ahead. I think it's a possibility. And if it's not one of those three, then you've got guys like Nick Castellanos. Could the Rangers bring in Edwin Encarnacion to compete at first base? You know, possibly. I don't know how much juice he has left in the tank. As far as what they gave up, and I think it's always important to consider a deal from the reverse, because whenever you make an acquisition, everyone thinks of all the great things that
right.
player can do, and Corey Kluber could do some great things. Let's consider if Corey Kluber's not very good. What did the Rangers give up? They gave up an awesome human being in Delino DeShields.
Right. Yes.
An awesome human being who might not have made the team out of camp. And if he did make the team, probably wasn't going to be an everyday player. They gave up Emmanuel Clase, who could be an outstanding reliever for the next several years. But they're selling high on a reliever who has less than half a season of big league experience, an electric arm that sometimes leads to injury. When you look at, you know, what leads to Tommy John, high velocity guys.
Right. Throwing cutters that go 101 miles an hour. Yes,
but,
exactly.
But that aside, you know what? Let's say you lose a reliever. Let's say you lose an impact reliever. That should never cripple a team's development. If you were to trade Mike Trout, then you know what? You're going to kick yourself for decades, generations.
Yeah.
That's going to be a trade that, you know, Babe Ruth getting, you know, going from the Red Sox to the Yankees. If you do that with even a closer, let's say Emmanuel Clase develops into an all-star level closer. If this front office isn't able to rebuild a bullpen despite that loss, that's more a reflection on them. And this front office has shown an ability within a season to help fix bullpens. And then as far as what Corey Kluber could do, let's just look at this beyond the stats. He adds a level of toughness, experience, big game pitching. All right, this rotation can use. Lance Lynn brought that attitude to this rotation. Mike Minor's outstanding. Mike's more of a, you know, kind of a laid-back, calm guy. Lance Lynn brings that son-of-a-gun attitude. Corey Kluber does as well. He's got the ability to be a real impact pitcher. He's got the ability to be the best pitcher in this rotation.
And that leads me to my question now is, if that's the case, we're talking about a team that already has Mike Minor and Lance Lynn. How good can this pitching rotation be? I mean, I heard Mike Bacsik, our buddy from 105 Through the Fan, say he believes that this could be the best rotation in the American League West. Now, I know the Astros have lost Gerrit Cole, but still, to me, if you can claim to have the best rotation in the West, that's a huge selling point for this team as they go into this new stadium and they're trying to re-energize the fan base after a couple of tough years.
I love my man, Mike.
Okay.
All right, I love Mike Bacsik. The Oakland Athletics have a very, very good rotation.
Sure.
And we'll get into that, I think, in a little bit. But he's right. This is a team, this is an organization that even in 2010 and 2011, their rotation wasn't anything that struck fear in you. 2010 got a little better when they added Cliff Lee, but the rotation as a whole was never something that was like, gosh, can't win this game, can't win that game, can't. Now, if Mike Minor and Lance Lynn even maintain their production from last year, if Corey Kluber bounces back to 90% of what he was in his last healthy year, and then you've got guys like Jordan Lyles and Kyle Gibson rounding out the rotation, now you've got a legitimate chance to win all five games. You know, in recent years, they've had whether it's 3-4-5, 4-5, or even the fifth spot, a pitcher who more often than not wasn't going to be the best pitcher in his pitching matchup that night. There's a chance that they could go two straight weeks and maybe have the better pitcher if things do pan out. And I think what I also like about this, Pat, you don't go through a season with just five starters.
Right.
You don't.
Sure.
And it's tough to have great depth beyond number five. It's tough to have great depth beyond number three.
No doubt.
But because the Rangers have a cadre of young, controllable pitchers who can't opt out if they don't make the opening-day roster, who, you know, if you say, hey, you're going to AAA, they're going to AAA. They've got some really talented, young, up-and-coming depth. So if they do get to 6, 7, 8, 9, all of a sudden, they're putting guys on the mound who have bright major league futures as opposed to retreads or guys who are just hanging on for their big league life. And I think that makes a difference, too.
Can't wait to get out to Surprise for spring training in 2 months. Hard to believe it's that close to here. But in the midst of all of this and everything that's going on, I also don't want to leave the Dallas Stars out of this. They're 2-2 in their last four games. Everything that's gone on, the firing of Jim Montgomery, we addressed that last week on the podcast. But still, just a really kind of bizarre season to this point. And I feel like this team has a chance to have a great season with the core that's there if they can somehow find a way to become a little more consistent. And on top of that, if they can overcome these distractions they've had to undergo that come with huge winning streaks, huge losing streaks to start the season, and now the firing of their coach.
So it's not like this team has been without any sort of drama the last couple years.
That's true.
Maybe Jim Leitz knew what he was doing.
There you go.
When he made some pretty... I guess
bold
comments because now these guys maybe more prepared for a little bit of drama. I don't know. One thing I'd like to see from the Stars team, penalty kill's been outstanding. Got to get that penalty power play up. And I think what's frustrating, you look at some teams and you look at the combination of talent, the guys they run out for their power play and anything. Yeah, I see why it's not a good unit. That's not the case with this group. I'd love to see Jamie Benn be more of a presence in front of the net, and there's just too much talent, offensive talent, for this power play to be in the bottom five of the NHL. If they can get that going, then this is a team that could not only replicate what they did last year, but maybe even exceed that. But, you know, playoffs are not just a foregone conclusion. This is still an incredibly tough division that they got to get through.
They are in the SEC West of the NHL and suffered a tough loss against the Oilers. I still think they have a chance to make a run. They were the favorite in Vegas just 3 weeks ago to make the Stanley Cup Finals out of the West, and that's saying a lot because, as you mentioned, the West is fantastic. All right, I want to transition now to our decent, not decent segment, our favorite and least favorite moments of the last week. You are my guest, Jared. Lead us off. What is your favorite thing from the last week that you experienced or you saw?
So I think number one for me, I thought Joe Burrow's Heisman speech was really cool.
Yes.
You know, you see all these young kids give speeches in these big moments, and they're not necessarily bad, but, you know, they're just like every other one you see. I thought it was really cool him just kind of shouting out the kids from the area in Athens, and not Athens, Georgia, but Athens, Ohio, where he grew up, troubled kids who grew up, you know, as he said, maybe not knowing where their next meal was. And not that he was necessarily one of those, but saying, hey, I'm a kid from Athens, and look at me. And it hasn't been easy for me, but here I am, and you can do that too. I don't know. I was very impressed by Joe Burrow's speech. That's the thing that's really stuck out the most to me. And on top of that, the other day, 25-year anniversary of one of the most impactful songs in my life.
Okay.
Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song.
How about that, man? Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Joe Burrow from Ohio, as you mentioned, potentially going to be the number one pick by the Cincinnati Bengals. Sticking with Ohio, my favorite moment of the week involves in a former Ohio State Buckeye, and which when I was just like standing like this, looking at the camera. I'm just talking, doing my report after the Cowboys game and their win over the Los Angeles Rams. And behind the camera, I see my colleague, Nui Scruggs, and our photographer, Victor Dominguez, just losing it. I mean, they're like laughing, and I'm thinking, what is so funny? I'm like sitting here trying to focus, and they get done, and I'm done, and I was like, what is going on? And they said, Zeke was being crazy behind you during your stand-up. And so I went and looked back at the video, and Zeke was doing the feed me thing behind me during the stand-up before he went running over to his family. And then so the clip got posted on social media by our web team. SportsCenter asked and put it on SportsCenter. Sunday Night Football on NBC showed a little clip of it as well. It ended up being this like crazy thing, all because Zeke was in a good mood because of a good win and did the feed me. So Zeke, if you'd like to do that again, you're more than welcome to feed me right here or right here anytime I am on air. That was a fun moment. My favorite moment of the week, just because it was something you didn't expect and it turned into a big thing. All right. Your not decent, least favorite moment, and least favorite thing of the week.
Yeah, I think I got to go with Josh Gordon's suspension again. And I think, to me, this is upsetting on a lot of levels. One, I feel for Josh Gordon. Obviously, he's got a problem and has had an incredibly tough time dealing with that problem. Is the NFL doing enough to support guys like Josh Gordon who deal with some of these challenges? I don't know that they are. I don't know that they aren't. But it's just something that pops into my head. It's just sad, and it makes me think of all the people in the sports world and out of the sports world who deal with addiction in some form and can't overcome. You know, we get all these success stories. This person, that person was addicted to this, addicted to that, and look how they've overcome it. And that's awesome, and those stories should be celebrated. There are also a lot of stories, maybe more stories, of those who don't ever overcome addiction. And it's just, it's sad. And you know, I'm not one of these people that thinks, well, all the attention should just be paid on the, you know, the athletes, the celebrities, because there are people who don't have the same sort of notoriety who go through challenges. And so Josh Gordon, to me, just represents all those people as a reminder. So that's tough to see. I've actually had the chance to interact with Josh Gordon randomly in Arizona at spring training a few years ago. Got to play basketball with Josh Gordon.
How did that go?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't really recognize him at first because he was wearing a hoodie. And it was like very like tightly securing his face and just this big guy, sweatpants, long sleeve shirt. All of a sudden, like I see a guy whose head is above the square in the backboard. And I'm like, and he takes his hoodie off and it's easy to see. That's Josh Gordon. unbelievable athlete, super nice person, and that very limited interaction, and just feel for him and feel for others who deal with addiction.
My not decent moment of the week came in one of the most disappointing, frustrating things that has happened in high school football that I can remember in a long time. It is Duncanville quarterback Jaquindon Jackson tore his ACL in the state semifinal game against Rockwall. The entire season has been built into this one giant funneling of the two best teams in the state rematching potentially in the state championship game. Duncanville and Galena Park North Shore from the Houston area. They played each other in the state title game last year. You might remember North Shore beat Duncanville on the Hail Mary on the final play of the game. One of the craziest finishes I've ever seen in sports, period. Both teams had a lot of players back from that team, from their teams. We were expecting the rematch. We have the rematch now set for this Saturday. But Duncanville's star quarterback, a Texas commit, tears his ACL in the semifinals. As soon as I saw it, man, I was like, no, don't be that. Don't be that. And it's that. He's officially out for the game.
Have you consoled Mike Bacsik?
He's
Mike's
upset.
Mike's getting a lot of airtime here today. Hey, let me ask you this. You're the high school football expert. Does Duncanville have a chance, or to what degree do they have a chance without Jaquindon Jackson?
They have a chance. They would be the favorites in the game if they had Jaquindon Jackson. I would say that they're probably about a touchdown-ish underdog, and it just depends on how good the backup is. The one advantage they do have is that they won so many games by 60 points this season that the backup's got a lot of playing time, right? So they got some, but this is a different animal when you're talking about playing against a North Shore team whose defense looks like a college defense. There's going to be 60,000 people there in AT&T Stadium and a state championship on the line. Just bummed we didn't get to see both teams at their full strength. All right, that leads us into our weekend ahead preview. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys on the road. I will be in Philadelphia as they take on the Eagles on Sunday. Dallas, a 2.5-point favorite. Jared, history tells us that this is a game that Dak Prescott will win. The reason why, here you go. 5-2 all-time against the Eagles. 17-5 all-time against the NFC East. And 10-4 all-time in the month of December. Simply put, as long as his shoulder is not that bad, Dak Prescott plays his best football when it matters most against the teams that it matters most against. I expect the Cowboys to go into Philly and clinch the NFC East Championship. What are you seeing in this game coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I do too, and I wonder if the big play is going to be a big part of that, because the Cowboys, as well as any other team in the NFL, have scored touchdowns on big plays. The Eagles, as poorly as any other team in the NFL, have surrendered touchdowns on big plays. So this Dak shoulder thing, interesting. Not all of these big touchdowns have come because Dak's aired it out. You got yards after the catch, putting guys in a position to get extra yards. So I imagine that we're going to see at least one big touchdown. What I'm curious about is to what degree does Carson Wentz try to be a hero?
Yeah.
Because Carson Wentz is really talented. I think what separates these two, among other things, is that Dak does a great job of checking down when he needs to. He does a great job of throwing it away when he needs to. He doesn't lose you games. Now, maybe in the past, Dak hasn't done enough to win you a game, but he's not going to lose you a game. Carson Wentz will lose the Eagles games. Now, he'll also single-handedly go and win them a game by running around in the pocket in a big moment, you know, shedding 17 potential sacks and then making a great pass downfield. But he's also going to fumble in the pocket. He's going to throw that costly pick. And I think if you can get pressure on Carson Wentz, even though the Eagles' O-line's been a good unit, you get pressure on Carson Wentz. I don't want to say it's going to be an easy win, but I think the Cowboys will control the game.
I've mentioned a few times the fact that I filled in on the Fan this morning with Sean Sharif, and we had Trent Dilfer on the show, and Sean asked him directly, he said, which player would you take right now if you could redraft? Would you take Carson Wentz or Dak Prescott? And I could tell Trent was very conflicted in the moment, and he said, it's not just because I'm on a Cowboys radio station right now. He said he thought he would take Dak Prescott, and it's hard to argue. Both guys are good. Both guys have a chance to be great, but from what we've seen to this point, I agree with you. I think Dak does a better job of not losing games for his team. Maybe Carson's best is a little better than Dak's best, but Dak is almost never down where Carson can be when he plays his worst. All right, transitioning to the Mavericks. They host the Celtics, the Sixers, and they take on the Sixers on the road, and then they play the Raptors this week. This is a huge test, and they're in the middle of facing the five best teams in the Eastern Conference, and again, they're doing this without Luka Doncic. What's a win for the Mavs in this between the Celtics, Sixers, and Raptors? Is it 2-1? Is it 3-0? Is it 1-2? Or at this point, can we not expect them to win any of these three, considering there are good teams they're facing and they don't have their best player?
I know they just beat Milwaukee.
Right.
And so maybe that, you know, changes people's expectations. All right, well, it beat the Bucks without Luka. You got to go win these games. If they can take one of these next three, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
I can live with that. You know, it's not going to be as easy as maybe they made it look against the Bucks to just go on the road to face a team that hadn't lost since early November and get stuff done without Luka. You know, Boston plays really hard on both ends of the court. They're really good in their backcourt defensively with Marcus Smart, offensively with Kemba Walker. I think tonight's going to be a really, really tough one for the Mavs to take. If they can get one of these next three, then, you know, hey,
yeah,
let's roll.
I'm wondering how real the Raptors are, too. You know, like if they can maintain what they've done to this point. So that's the interesting game on Sunday that I wonder if they could go into there and potentially pull that off. The Stars at the Lightning and then at the Panthers this week, and then they're home for the Flames on Sunday as well. As we've mentioned, it's just kind of been an up-and-down season to this point. They need to right the ship. They need to just start steadying a little bit. It doesn't mean that they have to roll off 14 wins out of 16 games like they did in November, but I would like them to, if they are going to be a serious contender this season, start winning 7 out of 10, you know, in that range, as opposed to 2 wins, then 3 losses, then 3 wins, then 1 loss, then 1 win, then 2 loss. And it's just kind of up and down, up and down. It feels like right about now is the time. If you want to be taken seriously, you need to start kind of winning these games and getting a little bit of a run, in my opinion.
I just want to see Roope Hintz take over.
Yeah.
I said before the year, 40 goals from Roope Hintz. Now, he got hurt, missed some time, 40 goals. Going to be tough, but when times are tough in the past, the Stars have looked to Jamie Benn and to Tyler Seguin. I don't know how much gas Jamie has in the tank to be that impact scorer. I think Tyler certainly still has it.
Sure.
But give me Roope Hintz. Young guy, flies, big guy, physical, can do a lot of the things that Jamie in his best years was able to do. I'm expecting a big rest of the season from Roope.
Should be fun to watch. All right, our transition now to the If I Were a Betting Man segment, which is fun because I'm clearly not a betting man. That's okay. I do like talking about 3 different bets every single week for the week ahead, the seasons ahead, whatever it is. And we could pick our favorite 3 and we talk about them. And my favorite one right now, the number 1 seed, has to do with the Mavericks you were mentioning a second ago. I think this Mavs team is real. I think that they are real contenders at this point. They are still plus 1,000 to win the Western Conference behind both of the LA teams and Houston. I'm not saying that I think that they are the best team in the West, but at this point, I would not be shocked. Assuming Luka Doncic is back by New Year's, let's say, I would not be shocked at this point. If this team got red hot, ended up being, say, the 3 seed, I think they're better than Houston. I mean, right now, I've seen enough from their bench to know they are deep. They can rely on different teams or different players on their team that I never would have been able to rely on before the season, at least in my opinion. Plus 1,000 to win the West. I think the Mavericks have a really good chance. If an injury happens here or two there for another team, they could slide in and potentially win the West.
Well, you know where I stood on that before the season.
I do. I was going to leave it alone.
Listen, I got to raise my right hand where I was wrong. I didn't believe in this Mavs team as necessarily a playoff team before the season. Tunes changed on that. They've been incredibly impressive. I'm going to go with something that might impact the Cowboys, might not, but I know that Cowboys fans have nightmares about the Green Bay Packers. Packers could be the number 1 overall seed in the NFC. It's really bunched together 4 teams that are tied right now record-wise for that top spot. They might get a bye first round. They might not. I don't care when they play their first playoff game, Pat. Packers are going to be one and done.
Okay.
I think to me they're the most flawed of the really good NFC teams. Some people might say the Seahawks because they're so run dependent and we live in an NFL world where running a lot doesn't necessarily bear the fruits of that labor. I'm going to go with the Packers. I just think Aaron Rodgers is still really good. He's not what he used to be. Aaron Jones has been really good. He's been their best offensive player.
The best Aaron. Yeah.
He's been the better Aaron.
Right.
The Packers do a nice job getting to the quarterback. Their defense is actually better than it's been in years past. There's something that's very flawed about that team. So I don't know that there's necessarily odds on this. But Packers not going to win a playoff game.
My second bet of the week, Cowboys are favored by 2.5 points in Philadelphia. I think Dallas is clearly the better team between the two here. And that's not saying that I think the Cowboys are awesome. I think they're fine. I think they're an above average team that on a good day can play like a great team, but you can't rely on that. But what I will tell you is that watching the Eagles fall behind Eli Manning 17-3 on Monday Night Football, then barely be able to claw their way back and win that game, and then to need a last-second touchdown to beat the Washington Redskins, who could have the second pick in the NFL draft, This Eagles team is not very good. I don't think the Cowboys are great, but I think they're clearly better. I think Dallas is going to win this game by about 7 to 10 points. I would take the Cowboys in that 2.5 point spread right there.
All right, last I saw, the Mavs, Pat, favored by 1.5 tonight against the Celtics. It's at home. It's a national TV game. Later start, I think it tips at around 8:30. They're coming off a big win on the road against the Bucks. You beat the Bucks on the road without your star, it feels like anything's possible. I think it's tough to back that up. I'd love to be able to say the Mavs are going to steal another one at home against the Celtics without Luka. I don't see it. I don't know if the lines change. Last I saw, 1.5 favorites were the Celtics.
That's right.
I think the Celtics cover that 1.5 and they get a win. Might not be a blowout, but I do think they get a multi-possession win.
It's hard not to see that. Just the fact that, too, like you said, too, the Mavericks having already lost to the Celtics earlier this year with Luka. Finally, this is my most bold claim of the day, and I'm always very hesitant to say anything negative and to start to bury the New England Patriots, right? Because nobody ever wants to be the person who gets played over and over again. Hey, look, this guy buried him, and they did it again. They found a way. I think the Patriots are going to lose at home this weekend against the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills are real. What I saw from Buffalo here in AT&T Stadium against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, I was like, that team's better than I thought. Then they go into Pittsburgh and they win that game as well. The Bills are 6.5 point underdogs on the road. I think the Bills are going to win the game. At the very least, they play close games over and over and over again. I think Buffalo, I'm taking them with the 6.5 points at New England, even though New England almost never loses at home, and I feel really uncomfortable doing it. But I've taken the Bills.
All right, so my final one is also bold. It's probably a little bolder than that. It's probably way more unrealistic than that. But I'm going to tell you who I think the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys is.
Okay.
And it involves the New England Patriots. Not Bill Belichick. Not going to be Urban Meyer. Not going to be Lincoln Riley. Those are names that are talked about. Robert Saleh. I don't think it's going to be Robert Saleh. I'm going to go with Josh McDaniels.
Okay.
And I think a part of it is the appeal of having a piece of Bill Belichick for Jerry Jones. I think there's mutual admiration between Jerry and Bill. I think Bill respects Jerry. I think obviously Jerry respects and admires Bill. He's not going to get Bill Belichick. I understand people saying, well, you got to at least make the call. Sure, make the call. That's fine. I don't think that's going to happen. But in Josh McDaniels, you get a piece of Bill Belichick. You get an innovative offensive mind. But you also get someone who doesn't have a ton of skins on the head coaching wall who you can still influence a little bit, which I think we've seen is maybe important to Jerry and the Jones family. But to me, maybe it's Urban Meyer, maybe it is Lincoln Riley. If they can sway one of those two guys, go ahead, by all means. I just think that the Bill Belichick connection, the Bill Belichick relationship, is going to be really, really appealing. And my guess is Josh McDaniels doesn't fake out the Cowboys like he did the Colts, and he's the coach of the Cowboys next year.
That was my question for you. How much does that impact the Cowboys in making sure a deal is done? But he's clearly had a lot of success. He knows how the Patriots do things. My biggest question about McDaniels, is he going to be willing to come to Dallas and do things the way that the Jones family wants to do things? Because the way the Joneses do it is a little different than the way the Patriots do things up in Foxborough. Hey, speaking of the Patriots, they might be in your Super Bowl. Probably not. Before, a couple weeks ago, I think most people had them in the Super Bowl. We're going to do our weekly Super Bowl picks. Your Super Bowl today is who, which two teams, and which team wins the game?
All right, I have the Ravens winning the Super Bowl as of now. 12 Pro Bowlers lined with talent. And it seems like this is the Lamar Jackson year. Whether Lamar Jackson is going to be able to do this for the next 5 years or whether the league will figure out a better way to defend Lamar Jackson and his attack, I guess we'll wait and see. But usually these things take a year for the league to catch up. So I think the Ravens get there, and I think they win. And the reason I lead with that is because that's not the most unlikely of my two Super Bowl teams. I think the Minnesota Vikings represent the NFC.
Minnesota Vikings.
Whether they win the division or not, and it's unlikely they'll win the division. Even if they beat the Packers this week, they need the Packers to lose to the Lions in Week 17 for the Vikings to have a chance. There's something about the Vikings defensively. They've got the lockdown corner in Xavier Rhodes. They've got the pass rushers in Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter. They've got really good secondary play with Harrison Smith joining Xavier Rhodes, Anthony Barr kind of in the middle. And then offensively, for the first time in the last several years with this great defense, they're balanced. They have the ability to be balanced. Yeah. And with Adam Thielen hopefully back and healthy for them, you got Thielen and Diggs as pass catchers. You got B.C. Johnson, who's not a bad third option.
No.
And then Dalvin Cook, who's been one of the best running backs in the NFL. If the shoulder's okay and he can stay healthy, I like Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
Some people don't. Inexplicably, I am a Kirk Cousins apologist.
Wow.
And I think he is more than good enough to get the job done. Now, I say that knowing one of the biggest knocks is his ability to win the big game. I just think that at times, if you look at some of those big games and look at the surrounding talent, maybe it's not all on him. I just think that this is a Vikings team in a wide open NFC. Absolutely wide open. I think the Vikings represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Fascinating if it happens because, man, if Kirk Cousins can overcome that perceived limitation to this point, it would be huge for him going forward. I'm going to stick with my pick the last 2 weeks, even though one of the two teams took a major hit last week. Okay, I have the 49ers winning the Super Bowl over the Baltimore Ravens. And the reason why, even with the Niners losing at home against the Falcons, who are really not playing for a whole lot, the Niners still have the best defense in the NFL, in my opinion. They were missing five starters in that game, most of whom are expected to be back this weekend. When I watched the Niners play the Ravens in Baltimore 2 weeks ago, and they lost the game, but they lost on a last-second field goal in the pouring rain in an incredible home field environment there in Baltimore, I looked at it and I said, if the game is not pouring down rain in Miami, you know, if it's clear weather and everything's good and normal conditions, the 49ers are the faster team. So the weather impacted them more than it impacted the Ravens outside of Lamar Jackson. He was the only player on the Ravens that really impacted. They're more the big, tough, kind of punch you in the face, whereas the Niners are the faster team. I just think the defense is great. I think the running game is special. They have three different guys that can run the football. Garoppolo this year, his numbers, if you look at him, almost the exact same as Dak Prescott, although people never consider him in the conversation to be a potential Pro Bowler. Everybody's saying Dak was a snub, and I do think he was a snub. I think Dak was better than Drew Brees this season based on Drew only playing nine games, but I think Garoppolo's right there. So I'm looking at it and I'm saying, I still believe in the Niners. I believe in Kyle Shanahan, and I think they have a real chance to make a run. Why am I crazy?
Well, I think you kind of disproved what a lot of people would say is, but do they have the quarterback?
Yeah.
But, you know, you bring up Jimmy Garoppolo's had a good year statistically. I'll be honest. I'm on that side of the fence, and I know I just a few minutes ago repped Kirk Cousins,
sure,
who has, you know, doesn't have any skins on the wall in this regard. I do wonder about the quarterback, but that defense is special, and it is a balanced offense. You know, they have the ability to control the clock. Here's the thing with the NFC, and this is why I think for Cowboys fans, it's so disappointing that maybe this has been such a grab bag year. This is the year they very easily had, we thought, had the talent on the roster to just seize control of
sure.
this conference.
Yeah.
Because, yes, there are four teams with the same record atop the NFC, and I think it's like the only time this has happened in I don't know how many years.
What ceiling do you give them?
Cowboys?
Yes, the ceiling right now? I mean, because I'm having such a hard time because what we just saw on Sunday against the Rams, I'm like, that team, if they played like that every week, could beat anybody. And yet my confidence level that they can play like that week in and week out, I have no confidence they can do that. It's unfortunate, you know?
I think their ceiling is limited by the defense. I just don't think consistently the defense has shown us enough. I don't want to let 1 week late in the season fool me. It's very easy to do that. I get it. And based on last week, I mean, that's the type of game where like, oh, no, it's figured out, ready to go. Miami, here we come. Book those hotel rooms. I just think at the end of the day, I do believe in the offense's ability to put up the types of numbers that they need to win big games. Don't believe in the defense to get the stops when they need to.
All right, let's do the quick high school football two-minute drill here. I'll take this over if you don't mind, Jared. We're going to start off with a really cool moment. Earlier in the day today, I was out at Jesuit Dallas High School where E.J. Smith, Emmett's son, signed his letter of intent. He's going to play college football at Stanford. He picks Stanford over Texas A&M, Florida, Georgia, and Ohio State. He's a phenomenal player. I will never forget watching EJ play his first varsity game as a sophomore against DeSoto, the reigning state champs, and he went for over 200 yards against a phenomenal DeSoto defense, and seeing Emmett in the stands just kind of pacing back and forth watching his son play. All of the expectation, all of the pressure that comes with being Emmett Smith's son, E.J. Smith has lived up to it. He is a fantastic player, and he's going to Stanford. So he clearly is a bright kid as well. In my conversations and interactions with him, I've been very impressed. I think he's a guy who has NFL Sunday potential, and it was really cool to see the entire school out there live on a national broadcast, him make his selection to go to Stanford, and I'm really going to be rooting for E.J. going forward. It is state championship week, as I mentioned earlier. The game of the year, the game of the week, a little bit marred now with Jaquindon Jackson, the Duncanville quarterback, tearing his ACL last weekend, unfortunately. But it is Duncanville against Galena Park North Shore Saturday at 3 o'clock in AT&T Stadium. I'm expecting more than 50,000 people to be there in the stadium for the high school football state championship game. It's going to be awesome. Two of the top five teams in the nation facing off, college players all over the field. I had a college assistant coach who was there recruiting the game last year tell me there were 23 Division I players in that game between those two teams. I expect nothing different this week. A couple of the North Texas teams playing in state championship games this week as well. You have Aledo playing against Fort Bend Marshall. If Aledo can win the state championship game against Fort Bend Marshall, they would become the first ever UIL 11-man team to win 9 state championships all time. Think about that. I mean, they would separate themselves from Katy, South Lake Carroll, and Salina. Those are the other three programs to do it. So huge opportunity to really kind of set themselves apart and be alone as the title town, which is what they're known as around the high school football world. And finally, I just got a shout out real quick. Two of the Denton schools, Denton Ryan and Denton Geyer, both playing for state championships this weekend. Talk about title town. Maybe it's Denton right now, okay? Denton Ryan playing the state title game on Friday night. Denton Geyer playing on Saturday night. The place is going to be packed all week long. The 6-man state football championship game is already underway on this Wednesday, and it's going to be all day today, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. We'll be out there for our NBC5 Big Game Friday coverage on Friday, and then recap as much as we can on the Inside High School Sports Show on Saturday night here on NBC5 as well. All right. Finally, our inspiring moment of the week, and I'm going to have one, and I'm going to kind of catch you off guard, and I'm going to let you share one as well. I'm going to let you go first because you had one of the coolest stories I've seen in a long time posted to social media when you were talking about Delino DeShields and the former Rangers player now traded to the Cleveland Indians. Man, I read that, and I was like, I know Delino way less than you do, but I do know him a little bit. And I was always very impressed with him. Did a big story about his faith conversion, you know, last year, getting baptized, and just trying to turn his life around and be a better person. But, man, your tweets, the little string that was there, I loved it. I was hoping you would share Delino DeShields and what he meant to you as a player for the Texas Rangers.
Sure, and it's really more what he meant to me as a person. Let me just start off by saying this. In exchanging texts with Rangers players the day they acquired Kluber, at first it was known, hey, Rangers agreed to a deal with the Indians. They're getting Corey Kluber. Players are texting me, fired up. This is like an early Christmas present. But the package was unknown. And then when they all found out that Delino was going to Cleveland, while they were still happy to get Corey Kluber, they were pretty upset. Delino was a pretty strong presence in that clubhouse, not in a loud way, but just in a really impactful way, the person he is. And I got to know Delino starting in 2009. I was at USC, a part of the baseball program there. Delino was on an official visit. He ended up committing to LSU, probably because he ran into me. He was like, I don't want to go to USC and be with that guy.
Stay away from that guy.
Ended up signing out of high school to play baseball, so it was irrelevant anyway. But he was about to get his campus tour, starting from the baseball office. I was in the baseball office. I had to get to class, and I was on the other side of campus. I didn't know how to ride a bike. It's embarrassing. We'll talk about that another time. And so the director of operations like, hey, you know, lunch hop on the golf cart. We did. Delino was on the golf cart. And so that's where we met. Didn't see him, speak to him, anything for several years later until 2015 when the Rangers pluck him in the Rule 5 draft. He's in camp. And I'm driving out of the Surprise Complex, like second day. We're still in February. It's still cold in Arizona around that time, windy. And I see Delino walking out of the complex with a backpack. And I drive past, and I kind of think better. I back up. I'm like, hey, you know, Delino, where are you going? He's like, oh, I'm going home. I'm like, I'll give you a ride. And just kind of ironic that our relationship continued after I bummed a ride on a golf cart. Yeah. I gave him a ride back home, and that kind of, I guess, started a friendship. And Delino, when I tore my ACL, tore everything in my knee a few years ago, I couldn't drive for 6 weeks during the season. Delino pulled me aside one day, how are you getting to the park? I'm like, I'm having to ask people, and it's middle of the day, it's kind of awkward times, like, I'll take you. Delino would take me to the ballpark, never mentioned it, never wanted anyone to know about it, would pick me up, would grab me. My wife and I went through some challenges with our house this past year. Delino was one of the first players who reached out and offered support, and he knew that baseball was kind of my safe haven during this past year because of all the tough stuff at home, and he made sure I was always smiling, and just a phenomenal person. And, you know, I hope this is great for his career. You know, again, from a baseball side of it, probably wasn't going to get regular playing time with the Rangers.
Yeah.
From a human being side of it, this is a big loss. And, you know, I'm thankful that I've gotten to know D. He's a great person, and I think there are a lot of people who have met him who would tell you the exact same and have their own stories.
No question about it. Wish him nothing but the best going forward. I loved that story, and I wanted to share it. Finally, just my inspirational story. It's not really a story, much more than it is just like an exciting thing. We got the notification that the Salvation Army Angel Tree Program, 49,833 angels. This is just a really cool program. Kids who aren't going to have a Christmas, aren't going to have a holiday celebration, no presents under the tree. And NBC5 is a huge sponsor, a huge partner in this program. I know the Cowboys are really involved in it as well. And so to hear that 49,833 kids are going to have a Christmas that would not normally have one, man, I just love that. If you're a part of that, way to go. If you're not a part of it, you should be next year. I mean, I'm sure there were more angels on the tree that could have been taken over from there too. Just a really cool thing, and I'm excited for those almost 50,000 kids who will now have a Christmas because of the generosity of people in the community. That is going to do it. We went 47 minutes strong. That was a fun one. I got to tell you, I love chatting baseball and sports in general with Jared Sandler. You can listen to him on 105.3 The Fan, and you're going to hear him a lot on the Rangers Radio Network as the Rangers season just about 2 months away from spring training. Dude, thank you so much for being in studio with me today, man.
Thanks, man.
A lot of fun chatting with you today. That is the NBC5 Sports Podcast presented by 105.3 The Fan. I am Pat Doney. Have a great week, everybody. Buddy.